welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note to indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. Indiana's 200th birthday is this year, a time to reflect on the state's history, not just the dates, the dry statistics of statehood, but the stories of a territory carved from the wilderness, the native people conquered, the incredible personalities on both sides. James H. Madison, Emeritus Professor of History at Indiana University, has a new book out called Hoosiers, A New History of Indiana. He's been long recognized as one of the state's best historians and a terrific storyteller. We caught up with Professor Madison at the Indiana Historical Society in Indianapolis.
Do you think we're coming to terms today in a way that we didn't in the past with the way that Native Americans were treated? This is the land of the Indians, but not for long. You think of the Trail of Tears in Tennessee and other places. We have our own history.
We do. It's a great irony that we have a state named for Indians in which there are no Indians. Now, that's not quite true, because there's some Native American peoples in Indiana, we know that, but not very many. We know much more about the Native American story from the very beginnings, and especially from Territorial Governor William Henry Harrison, who arrived here in 1800 with two missions. The major mission was to eliminate the Indians from this part of the world. And he and his successors did that very well, very successfully. By the 1830s, 1840s, most of the Native Americans had been removed. Forcibly removed from Indiana. It is, from many angles, a great tragedy. It happened. We have to deal with it. We have to understand it. We have to appreciate what it means in terms of two cultures, Native American, Euro-American, ships passing in the night. We know a lot more about that Native American culture now. There have been a lot of scholarship. Even though most Native Americans did not read and write English, scholars have found ways to tell their stories and to have an appreciation, for example, for Tecumseh, who I believe is one of the great leaders of all time, not just Native American leaders, a very sophisticated American leader with a vision, a strategy. The fact that he lost, the fact that he's part of the losing side in this clash of cultures, doesn't make him any less a leader, doesn't make his position, his culture, any less. We now can understand that. We can tell those stories in a way that 50 years ago we couldn't tell.
Can you talk to us a little bit about Tecumseh and the prophet?
Tecumseh and his half-brother, Tekswatawa, the prophet, are two very, very interesting guys. We now have good biographies of both of them and of the larger movement. What makes Tecumseh so brilliant is that he had an answer to the basic problem, which was that there wasn't one Indian people. There were many, many, many Indian peoples, different tribes, Miami, Potawatomi, the two big ones in Indiana, but many other Native American groups, clans. So all kinds of Native Americans, they didn't speak the same language always. They didn't disagree. They went to war among themselves. They differed in fundamental ways. Tecumseh's vision was, we've got to get together. We've got to form a pan-Indian confederacy of all Native Americans, and we have to do that because we are being invaded from the Atlantic Ocean. These foreigners are coming. These Europeans, these Americans are invading our land. They're coming across the Appalachian Mountains. The only hope we have is if we unite in a pan-Indian confederacy and we resist, we force them back, we make better negotiations in our treaties, because of course Harrison and others are negotiating treaties with Indians that are very much to the disadvantage of those who signed the Native American treaties. Tecumseh's vision here was brilliant, and he just might have succeeded. He had some bad luck along the way, not necessarily succeeded in keeping this land for Native Americans for all time, but succeeded in getting a better deal for them in this negotiation between two cultures. So I have great respect for Tecumseh.
What other figures would you say that we want to recall during this year, during this bicentennial year? Who should we not forget?
Oh my, there's so many Indiana figures to remember. And the good news is we have more and more biographies of them. We have a collection of biographies of our governors published by the Indiana Historical Society. We've had some very interesting governors. My favorite is Oliver P. Morton, governor during the Civil War. I think he's the greatest governor in the history of Indiana. Indiana could have gone away during the Civil War as a Union force. Lots of Hoosiers by 1863 were not very eager to continue to fight against the Confederacy. Morton made sure that Indiana stayed in the war and contributed immense amounts of men and materials and resources to defeating the Confederacy. And Morton did that in a very sophisticated political way. He often did it with an iron fist, not even a velvet glove around that iron fist. He just pushed it through. It was leadership. It was leadership matched by Abraham Lincoln's leadership in the White House. So at this, the most perilous time in our history, we're blessed to have a great leader in the State House, Oliver P. Morton, a great leader in the White House, Abraham Lincoln. And this is the time to say, never ever forget where Abraham Lincoln grew up. He grew up in Indiana. Lincoln was a Hoosier. So two Hoosier greats.
This is a reminder in some ways of major moments in our past and the Hoosier character. Is there a way to sum up what the Indiana character is?
That is a tough one. What's a Hoosier? What makes people Hoosiers? I have arguments about that. I'm always a little uncertain about those positions, arguments, hypotheses. But I decided in this book to go a little further than I might have done in earlier books. And I write much more about this with a little more certainty than maybe I have sometimes, to argue that by the late 19th century, by 1900, Indiana had formed, this mixture of peoples had formed into a special people. They were not Southerners, they were not Northerners, they were Hoosiers. They were different, even different from people in Ohio or Illinois or Kentucky, Hoosiers. So I argue that we were a distinctive people by 1900. I think we remain a distinctive people. Even in this world where some argue the whole world is flat, globalization has made everything the same and uniform and homogeneous, I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. And the case in point for me is that Hoosiers are not like Texans, thank God, or Californians, or New Yorkers, or even Kentuckians. We have a distinctive culture.
James H. Madison, a member of the Indiana Bicentennial Commission and an emeritus professor of history at Indiana University. His new book is called Hoosiers, A New History of Indiana.
So blow, blow, Seminole wind, blow like you're never gonna blow again. I'm calling to you like a long lost friend, but I know who you are. And blow, blow,
Indiana Weekend, interesting people and places from across our region. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Lincoln really did grow up in Indiana from age 7 to 21.
That's somewhere. Correct.
The Indiana of that time. What would we not recognize? Put us on the shores of the Ohio River and at the start of the Buffalo Trace or something, and we're trying to go north. I mean, what would this be like?
Well, the first thing I think would astonish us immediately when we get off the boat on the Ohio River is, my goodness, there are trees here. Big trees, lots of trees. In fact, so thick, so heavily wooded that it was difficult for the first people to navigate through those forests. It was difficult to find your way. People got lost all the time in the forests of southern Indiana. There's a big canopy of leaves in season. It's very dark in there. There are wild animals, bears, all sorts of other dangerous things that can happen. So in some ways, it's a very scary kind of place at the very beginning.
And relations between Native Americans and the Europeans, quite vividly hostile at times.
Often very hostile, not always. There were good neighbors. There were efforts on the part of some of the first folks here from the East to work with Native Americans to, for example, teach them how to farm, to convert them to Christianity. None of that worked real well. There were periods of peace. There was interactions of peace and neighborliness, but there was also hostilities. Hostilities that resulted in death in real armed conflict and bloodshed. I guess one of the great examples in Indiana history is the Pigeon Roost Massacre, where families were killed by Native Americans. But there are other examples of that. And then, of course, there's the Battle of Tippecanoe in 1811, where Native Americans have their last actual military resistance to these invaders from across the Appalachian Mountains. They lose that battle. We now know that's the end of the story, the beginning of the end of the story, the Battle of Tippecanoe in 1811.
Reminders today of the importance of our Native American heritage include the city of Anderson, named for Chief Anderson.
Yes.
Kickthawenin. This was a great leader, too.
A great leader, and one of many great leaders among the Delaware people, the Shawnee, as well as the Miami, the Potawatomi, and the many of the others. I guess Chief Anderson today is most well known to Hoosiers as the father of Mekingus, who married William Connor. And that story, which is so wonderfully told at Connor Prairie, of this American-American, William Connor, marrying a Native American, the daughter of a chieftain, for very good reasons, and having a handful of children with her. However, as times change, as the Native Americans are turning out to be the losers in this struggle, Mr. Connor at one point says, "Goodbye, honey," and sends her off with the children west. Stays here, marries a American woman soon after, and has more children with her, and becomes one of the most prosperous men in central Indiana. That house he built, Connor Prairie, the Connor House in the early 1820s, may be the first and the largest brick house in central Indiana.
In this year, there's some places that we should go and see if we haven't been. So if we haven't been to Grouseland, we should go to see this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would urge everyone to go visit Grouseland in Vincennes and the town of Vincennes itself. Grouseland is probably the most interesting place. It's William Henry Harrison's home. He built it in the early 1800s. He was from the James River of Virginia. He came to Indiana as a plantation aristocrat with his slaves, and he built a kind of plantation house on the Wabash River. When everyone else, including the Lincoln family, were living in log cabins. But you see that house, you see the room in which he conducted his business, you see the place where he met with Tecumseh, and you get a very good sense of the issues of what it was like in territorial Indiana. So Vincennes, absolutely. Also the place of the George Rogers Clark Memorial, the French heritage is there. I like to remember that there were people moving up and down the Wabash in the 1730s who were speaking French, who were singing French songs, as well as Native Americans. And their primary point in Indiana was Vincennes. So it's an interesting town.
Is there still more for us to learn?
Well, there's always more to learn. History is always changing. Some people think wrongly that history is carved in stone, and it stays that way for all time. Go back and read a history book published 100 years ago or 50 years ago, and you'll see how out of date it is, how wrong it is in its perspective, if not always its facts. We've learned so much about the history of Indiana in the last 30 years. New versions of old stories, like George Rogers Clark, the story of Clark is very different from the one we knew in 1979, when we had Clark on our license plate. But news stories, the most important news stories to me, are the stories of African Americans. We now know, it's obvious, that there were African American pioneers in Indiana. The default was white. All pioneers were white 50 years ago. We now know that's not true. There were black Hoosiers living in Madison and Evansville. There were black Hoosiers living in rural settlements across Indiana, in Lyle Station in Gibson County, in Roberts Settlement in Hamilton County, in the Weaver Settlement in Grant County. These were African American pioneers in the 1830s and 40s, free men and women, farming, building churches, building schools, doing the things that that white Americans did, but they were African American.
James H. Madison, perhaps Indiana's best-known historian. His new book is called Hoosiers, A New History of Indiana.
He's an emeritus professor of history at Indiana University Bloomington and a member of the Indiana Bicentennial Commission.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
There's a tendency around a big anniversary like this to remember the gauzy past and cast it in sort of a rosy haze. An honest assessment of Indiana's past, though, is that we've had moments in the state's history that weren't so golden.
Absolutely. We all want happy stories. We all want stories that make us feel good. I call it comfort history. You comfort people by telling them happy stories. And maybe those stories are necessary and appropriate for fourth graders. But for adults, those stories, I think, work in the wrong direction. Even for high school kids, they make them cynical because they know those stories aren't all true. They know there must be other stories that you're not telling them. I think for adults to function in this world of the 21st century as citizens, as good people living good lives, they need to know all the stories, the full stories. And in these stories of our past, there are stories of great tragedies. We had in Indiana in 1930 a situation in which hundreds of white Hoosiers took three African American teenagers out of a county jail and lynched them on the courthouse square. That's a tragedy. You can pretend it didn't happen. You can say, I don't want to talk about it. But I think that's putting your head in the sand. I think that's whistling in the dark. We have to know that story. We have to put that story in the context of relationships in Indiana between white Hoosiers and black Hoosiers. We have to put it in the long struggles, 200 years now, of racial politics, racial differences in Indiana. So that story of the Marion lynching and other tragic stories, which make us uncomfortable, I think are essential stories, even in our year of celebration, even in our 200th anniversary.
This is part of history's job.
Absolutely.
The lessons from the past.
Absolutely.
That resonate today.
Absolutely. And that's another aspect and reason why history is changing, because history is always a dialogue between our present and the past. Again, not carved in stone. We today are creating our own history for our time. For example, I wrote a history of Indiana many years ago, and I didn't write very much about environmental issues, climate, water, soil quality, a little bit, but it wasn't on my agenda. In this new book, I write quite a bit about environmental issues because they are on my agenda. They're on the agenda of all of us, whatever we might think. We know that that is an issue, a problem today, and we need to know what it was like years ago. I know, for example, it's not a very comforting story, but the good people of Muncie, Indiana, and Anderson, Indiana, in the 1920s and for a while after, were dumping raw sewage into the White River. I guess it was okay if you were in Muncie, it was going down to Anderson. If you were in Anderson, it's going down to Indianapolis. But White River was a cesspool. We know that now. And we know we can't do that now. There are changes. And the history of those changes, the perspective that they represent today in the 21st century, is a very essential part of history. It's our dialogue, past and present.
There's so many fascinating figures in Indiana's history. If you had the chance to sit down to dinner, who would you want to have dinner with, and what would that conversation be like? What would it be like to talk to William Henry Harrison?
Like to talk to William Henry Harrison. My first choice would be Abraham Lincoln, and I'm going to say Lincoln is a Hoosier again. And I'd love to talk to Lincoln. There's so many questions about Lincoln. Lincoln was just the smartest, most amazing person. I'd have to start with, okay, Mr. Lincoln, you admitted later on in life that the totality of your schooling resulted in less than 1 year of formal learning. How did you learn to write so well? Because Lincoln wrote very, very well. Just read any of his inaugural addresses, read the Gettysburg Address. He was a superb writer. And he was also a superb thinker. So what is the magic behind your work, Mr. Lincoln. How did you do that? What did you read as a lad in Indiana? We know a little bit about that. What did you read later on? Who did you talk to? What kind of stories did you tell? The biographers of Lincoln have found bits and pieces of that story, but nothing close to the complete story. So I'd love to talk to Lincoln. He also told off-color jokes. I'd like to ask him to tell me some of his favorite jokes.
Is the story true that he took the trip down the Mississippi River, saw slaves sold at auction, and that?
Yes, as a young man, he was, I think, 19 years old, like many young Hoosier guys. He and some buddies got together. They built a rectangle wooden box, caulked it. It floated in the river and filled it with goods, pork, chickens, anything from his hometown, his home area, that they could put in this box and perhaps sell at the end of the journey. So they put this box, this flat boat, into the Ohio River, down the Ohio to the Mississippi, to New Orleans, which is the major trading post. And there, the goods are sold. They sell the goods. Many of them are put on sailing ships and taken to Philadelphia. Indiana pork ends up in Philadelphia and New York as a consequence of this flatboat trade. Lincoln made the trip as a 19-year-old. It's almost certain that he saw the slave markets in New Orleans. He saw human beings bought and sold. He had seen slaves before, but it's hard not to imagine. He never saw anything quite like the New Orleans slave markets. This flatboat trip was a fascinating part of growing up in Indiana. Hundreds and hundreds of young Hoosier men did it. It was sort of like spring vacation combined with overseas study for a university student, a chance to get out of your home place, a chance to see the world. Huckleberry Finn sort of recreates that world for readers today, but it's a wonderful part of Indiana's history.
James H. Madison. The book is Hoosiers, A New History of Indiana. It's an unvarnished but very engaging look at Indiana's colorful past and the personalities whose vision shaped the early Hoosier state. He's an emeritus professor of history at Indiana University and a member of the Indiana Bicentennial Commission. In this year of the state's 200th birthday, we're hearing some of the vivid stories of Hoosier history. And you simply can't find a better teller of those stories than Professor Madison. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft, and all the folks in the front office, including your friends Matt Bloom, Connie Clary, Lori Georgie, Emily Kowalski, Andrea Lutz, John Morgan, Angie Rapp, and Debbie Webb. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.